Great Sancho Panza. We were in a very nice hotel, and a group of upstanding citizens like yourself were there, and we were at about this stage of the seminar, and two fellows come in the door with cowboy boots and big old hats, and they weren't the passive types who just sat in the back. They come right to the front. Howdy for everybody, and right in the middle of the seminar, and I said, oh my God, I thought this was the sport of kings. Who is this aberration? Well, he never took his hat off and wasn't about to. So, as many early shocks in life do, this original shock turned into a kind of a love affair. I don't even know, hardly ever call him by name anymore. As far as I'm concerned, he's the hat. And underneath that hat and that rough, oaky exterior lies one of the sharpest brains and finest handicappers and most loyal, devoted human beings I've ever met. Jim the Hat, Bradshaw.
Tell you one thing, these boots ain't made for walking. I'm glad to see I've made a lot of friends at these seminars. See a lot of them here. See some that I'll make friends. And I'm glad to see so many that have turned out. You wouldn't believe some of the stories I would tell you about my horse playing. There's no one in this room that was as bad as I was. There's no one that's done anything to pick a horse that I haven't tried. And no one has lost as much money trying to win at horse racing that I had. I bought all the tickets on all of the horses in one race just so I could cash a winning ticket. Now that's bad. And I won, and it's wonder they didn't disqualify my horse, but I had the other one. I've owned horses. I've trained horses. I've trained runners. But for the life of me, I could not pick a winning horse. And I knew that it could be done. I just didn't know how until I discovered the Sartan method. I don't need to tell you that it works. You know that it works, or you wouldn't be here. As Howard said, you wouldn't spend the money on something that you didn't believe in. The thing that you don't really realize are the tools that you have. When they are applied properly, there's nothing that can stop you from winning at the horse races. You listen to Howard on his money management. His psychological aspects, a of why we lose. And then you apply the method, and it works. That's why we're here, to help you achieve with the Sartan methodology. Because we are grateful to Howard Sartan for showing us the way, showing us how to apply the method. I think personally that it has come a long ways in the 3 years that I have been using it. And I know that it will improve more with the dedication of the people that we have using the method. If there's anyone, any doubt, you know, you're wasting your money coming to one of these seminars if you think that it doesn't work. It's a waste of your time. If you say, I have the program and it doesn't work, it's not the program, it's not the method, it's you. You know, Michael told you that some of the old beliefs that horse players have, you've got to cast those aside. You know, when we 20 to 30, we think we know all of the answers. When we're 30 to 40, we know we don't know all of the answers. When we get 40 and 50, we try to find the answers to the questions that we've had that we ignored. And now it has been given to you in a gold wrapper. As I said, I tried everything to win. I've bet on the jockeys, and I've bet on the trainers, and I've bet on post positions. I've bet on touts. I've been touted on horses, and I never won. I thought I'd found a gold mine. I had a bookie friend that was giving me all of the layoff horses. Hell, they didn't win. He just wanted me to bet on the horses, bring the odds down. But use the tools and use them properly, and I guarantee you they work. I can tell you stories about jockeys, and I can tell you stories about trainers. And I can give you my philosophy on them. Let the jockeys ride the horse. Let the trainers shovel that stuff out of the barns. That's what they're good for. Yeah, I know we have good trainers. You know, you gotta quit thinking. You gotta think positive on everything that you do. You can't believe that your track is an exception to the rule. The method works on any track, on any race, on any day. If you ever went to the track I had to go to, you'd think that, God, any track was a rainbow. Our stakes races are the Alpo stakes. You know, God, if you don't win, you go to the glue factory. Got a buddy that trains horses. Got to tell you one little story at Blue Ribbons Down. The other day, a cowboy come in with his pickup truck, had his horse in a trailer. He got his horse out of the trailer. He put the saddle on it. He didn't have a jockey. He didn't have a horse to lead it to the gate. So he asked my buddy, he said, would you get me a jockey to ride my horse? So my buddy said, yeah, I'll find the guy that'll ride it. He said, will you take my horse to the gate? Buddy said, yeah, I'll take your horse down to the gate. Took him to the gate, and the horse acted like he'd never seen a gate. You know, he's a-kicking, and he's trying to get out of there, and the jockey's afraid of the horse, don't want to ride it, because he's rank as he can be. He's thoroughbred. I don't know who he's out of, you know. But, I mean, he's... So they put... The race starts, and the old horse running about fifth. Out of six horses coming around the last turn. And danged if that horse didn't kick it in gear and win that race. Paid $17. Them buddy goes back up, looks the guy up, said, the old horse did pretty good. Said, yep. Said, I bet 20 across on him. Said, well, why didn't you bet more than that? Said, well, said I, hell, I didn't know he was going to win the race. He bought my buddy a $2 show ticket. But, you know, the horse had never run. I'd have probably missed that horse. As it made, I'd have probably passed the race. I know my buddy didn't bet on it. Had to lead the horse down, put him in the gate, everything. But that's something, those are races that you have to pass. You've got to know races to pass and races to bet on. If there's intangibles in the race that you can't determine who's going to win the race, it's time to forget it and look at the next race. You know, as far as I know, they're going to run again tomorrow. So, you know, it doesn't hurt to pass a race. Don't blame it on the method. Don't blame your shortcomings on the method. Because it works. And I think Howard Sarton for showing me the way. Thank you, Howard. They said this is very much like a United Nations room. This is where we had the setup here with the tiered seats. And 30 said, that's good, we get a translator, just like you do at the United Nations when Jimmy comes on. But the eloquence of honest insincerity needs no translator. Since Reconstruction, there have been philosophers and social do-gooders who have tried to bring harmony among the races in the United States. They didn't do much good, really. In our PERCO group, we have people from all parts of the country. We've got a bunch of southern rednecks. One guy, in a period of maybe 10, 15 minutes, did for race relations what two centuries of philosophers have never been able to do. He narrowed it down to one race.
the horse race. Our friend and second to the last PERCO member by order of chronology from Chicago, Robert Cochran.
I want Pozzola to be the only one to get that ethnic stuff.
I'd like to say welcome to everyone. This is my first trip to New York, by the way. And it's just like they said it was, you know, all the bad weather comes east. But the people are nice. I'll probably echo a lot of the same things that the previous speakers said. And I guess it's the truth, and that's why it's being repeated over and over again. We're trying to drill it into you so you'll believe it. I became familiar with the Sartan methodology in 1985. This is my fifth seminar, and I'll probably be expecting to look forward to my next one when I leave this one, because I'm still learning, even though I'm a charter member. I learn something new every time I go to a seminar. I meet new people, I learn things from them about their track. I can tell them things about my track, because I've made a commitment to learn everything I could possibly learn about the tracks that I play in my area. And when you leave here after these 3 or 4 days, you'll have to do the same thing. When Michael spoke about an open mind, he meant that you will have to make the same commitment that we're going to make for these 4 days, drilling and teaching and training and transferring the information and techniques that we use to become winners. You're going to have to commit yourself to learn the procedures thoroughly, to do the work. It's not easy until you've learned the procedures. Then it is easy. It's laughable. It's so easy. But it doesn't stop, because you have to keep learning too, because racing changes. It changes on a daily basis. It never stays the same, especially in Chicago. Like Jim said, it works at every track under any type of condition. This is something that you'll have to find out. You'll have to find out how it works, when it works, and what the conditions are at your track. Well, in these 3 or 4 days that we're going to be here with you, you're going to learn this, or make an attempt to learn it. Maybe some people won't. Maybe some people will give up and say it's too hard. Again, like Jim said, don't blame the method. Put the blame where it belongs. If you do the work, you'll get the payoff. There's an old saying that winners associate with other winners, birds of a feather. You're judged by the people you associate with. Well, that's why I associate with these guys and Dr. Sartan. I've probably bought as many systems as anyone in this room and played the horses for over 20 years. And I've won at times, but I didn't really know why I was winning or why I was losing. Well, I was losing because I picked the wrong horse, obviously. But I didn't know why he was the wrong horse. Now I do. When I lose, I know why I lost, because I can go back and see what I missed or overlooked, and you can do the same thing. When I win, I know why I win, and I deserve to win, because I do my homework. I commit to myself and to the doctor and to the PERCO group to be a winner, and that's what I've done. And again, I'd like to welcome all the new people here and the familiar faces that I've seen at previous seminars. And we're going to do everything we can in the next 3 or 4 days to make you winners in the future. Thank you.
Robert's second reason for being one of our prize PERCO members is his wife. Probably one of the most beautiful creatures that God ever created. And sometimes Robert says that it was the devil done it, but you will get a chance to meet the lovely Wanda before this seminar ends.
She really did cut me off.
Uh-oh. For some reason, doctors, lawyers, accountants, and in growing numbers, men of the cloth have taken up this avocation of handicapping. Now, I can understand why some men of the cloth would take it up. But here is a man who is, they used to call these people circuit riders, these kind of preachers who went from one church to another on a Sunday morning because neither one of the churches were able to support a parson on their own. So the first real preacher we had who actually had gone to years of seminary, most of them bought it, you know, they bought $2 ministerial licenses, but this guy was legit. And he went through everything that you would wish on a preacher. My fondness for preachers is not overwhelming in general. I think that they have, as a psychologist working with persons with mental problems, we have found that probably those who contribute more to mental problems other than mothers are preachers. And preachers of all denominations. I'm not letting the Roman Catholics off or the rabbis off. The greatest problem, however, lies in the Christian community. And I always thought for years and years that mankind would be much better off if Nero had had more lions. We'd get someone who swore to God that they had these terrible guilt complexes and were in mental hospitals, and we'd get them out of the back wards and get them where they were almost cured, getting rid of these tremendous and horrendous guilt complexes which haunted them and bedeviled them. Just when we get them where they could go to the outpatient ward, some Baptist minister would come in, get them on their knees, and let me pray for your forgiveness of your sins. Back they would go, catatonic again. So it was always with mixed emotions that we took on anyone of the cloth. We felt, well, maybe they'll lose and that will be retribution. But lo and behold, from that good Scotsman, John Calvin, came one amongst us who truly lived up to the word Christian and also lived up to the word winner, who did on a $50 bank, on a pittance of what most of us consider necessary, that which is exemplary to all of us. When his bank was $50 and he faced the same problems that all of us face with a lot more and overcame them, he became very close to our hearts. The bear himself. Not the Reverend Bert Main this time, but Bert Main.
Close? Down here someplace? Anywhere that works. Okay. That didn't work. Obviously, my strong suit isn't working with little clip-on mics. Let's put it on here. How's that? Okay. The problem with a lot of what Howard says about ministers is that most of it's true. It gives me a tough time for rebuttal. I always remind him, though, that Calvin was actually French, and it was John Knox, who was the great Scotsman who brought the Calvinist thoughts to Scotland. And anybody that can make single malt whiskey and the Reformed theological tradition can't be all bad. I'm a home brewer also, so I know a lot about malt. And I keep goats, so no one can get mine, you know. No matter what they say. I'm thrilled to be here. This is a heck of a lot of fun. I think that's the secret for me for the whole thing is that I'm on call 24 hours a day, and all kinds of things happen, and I get a hold of the racing form. Sometimes I have to threaten people and things like that because where I live, it never used to show up. And I asked them, could they please get the racing form? And they said, okay. And then somebody else in town decided they wanted the racing form. And I had to go and say, look, I'm bigger than you are. Keep the racing form for me. Put Bert across the top of it. You know, and if they want it, they can special order it. And got a hold of the form. I go down after I take care of the milking chores, you know, and my wife, who was checking everybody in, Joanne, she helps me with all the milking and all of this. We only have about 5 little does that we milk, but 2 of them actually should not be milking. Michael thinks they ought to be running at Finger Lakes. But maybe not. They have all 4 of their legs, so hey. At any rate, I head on down there and I get a hold of the form, and then for about an hour or so, before about 9 o'clock in the morning, I could be anywhere in the world, you know. I go there and I have this fun of looking for the truth, because my boss, not anybody here, but my boss talked about the truth making people free, and it does. And that's one of the scariest things you'll ever confront, is the possibility of freedom, radical freedom. Radix from the Latin, roots, from the roots up, freedom. You know the old song, country western song, take this job and shove it? Most people wouldn't really do that, you know? They love the fantasy of doing it, but they don't really want to do that. I mean, you might think you really want to do that, but people wouldn't really... You can only do that if you're free enough. Financially, most people aren't free enough. One of the things that I used to do, I had a number of other odd jobs. I used to play guitar and be an entertainer before I went into the ministry, and I had to do a lot of playing and all kinds of things to try and make ends meet the first 2 years that I was out at the two, serving the two little churches that I serve. And one of the nice things about this is I can do this on my own time. I don't have to go play. Bars are tough to play because you got to get over the crowd noises. I used to play bars when I was younger and totally crazy. And, you know, as I got a little more straight, I played fewer bars. But this is nice because I can sit there at home and use my little OTB phone account and call in, and the nice people on the other end take them all, whatever I want to bet for the day, and I don't have to play 9 races or 7 races. I can play 1 race or 2 races. And like I said, I haven't been at all lucky at Saratoga. I've just been darn good. And that's only because of the Sartan methodology. I mean, 80% ain't luck. And I went out of Belmont that way, and I've come into Saratoga that way and been very happy. At one point, thought if I could ever get to 63%, you know, that'd be enough. Sacrifice one of my goats, anything, get up to 63%. Fortunately, the herd is unscathed, and all it took was redoubling my efforts. And one of the things that I used to do was to over-intellectualize and complicate the thing too much. This is like the great comic Lord Buckley once said about Jitterbug, it was so simple it evaded him. This is one of those things that's simple but not easy. It really is. The methodology is relatively simple but not easy. It looks complicated, but most of the complications we really make for ourselves. I know I complicated the heck out of it any number of times. To no avail, but I did it. And then I'd, you know, call up somebody and... Of course, to California time problems, you know, you call up somebody and you forget that it's 9:30 Eastern time in the morning, but for somebody else, you're getting them out of bed or whatever. You have all these problems and make these terrible problems. It's all over intellectualization. If you let yourself go and enjoy it and look at it as something that's fun, it's a challenge and it's a struggle, but have fun with it. I think that's the best thing that I can share with you. The subconscious mind will do the rest, really. If you keep at it long enough, you'll find yourself picking pace lines because they're the pace lines that win. And, you know, all these ranking things, the programs that come out with rankings of 5 and all this stuff. And a couple of the people here, won't mention anybody by name, but one of them usually says, oh, shoot, there's only 2 horses here. So the whole ranking thing doesn't, you know, but...
Number's 2.
That's his model. His whole model is 2. Jim just, you know, Jim is being an Okie. He follows along the lines of that great Oklahoma native Will Rogers, who advised people in the stock market. He said, oh, stocks isn't such a hard thing to do. He said, what you do is you buy a stock low and you sell it high. And he said, if it don't go up, don't buy it. That's Jim's method. You open the form, you find the horse that's going to win. If it don't win, don't play it. You know, very simple. And he does. That's exactly how he does it. I think you're 114% win proficiency or something. He's man's maddening. But at any rate, have fun with it. Let your subconscious minds go. Don't get too burdened down by it, because the truth makes you free. It doesn't squash you down. It's going to make you free. That's a little scary. Be aware of the fact that it'll be a little scary. You confront the possibility that you could be your own boss. You confront the possibility that you can be somebody who's doing what less than 0.1% of all the people who go to the races can do. That'll scare you a little bit, but it's a fun scare. So enjoy it.
Here's my ticket. I'm going to try and get some more chairs for us, okay? We'll need a couple more.
Well, anyone, that's big enough. Because one will be standing at all times.
One standing? Okay.
For now. Make sure there's plenty of coffee when the time comes. Our latest Spurco member came to us belatedly. He bought the method and put it down and then picked it up. But he is an expert on methods and systems. In fact, so to the point that Gambling Times magazine has him as a consulting editor on the subject of systems and methods. He gets them all free that way. All those things that you see advertised for exorbitant prices, he gets them free. He did not have the audacity to ask me for one free. That's because I wouldn't have sent it, because I don't want it reviewed by Gambling Times or anybody else. But he bought it. But he is, the story on him, as told by his cohort, is that he could make anything work. He make a lot of the methods that are on the market today work to the extent of their ability to work. And if they could not work, if they were pure junk, he would know that too. He possesses a rare quality, and that is the quality of not projecting his own emotions or his own prejudices or his own ego into something, but testing it for exactly what it is. And that's a rare quality that most of us do not have on any subject, but he has it on every subject. So consequently, when he did test it, he tested it exactly as it was presented to him. He did not add this twist or that twist or combine it with Abner Crabtree's or Joe Blow's methodology or combine it with his accumulative 20 years of prejudices and mythology. Therefore, he was able to make a very objective viewpoint on what worked and what did not and why. Subsequent to his learning how to make it work and his subsequent expertise, he did, as so few people have the equity to do. I'm talking about psychological equanimity. He did abandon a career of 14 years and is now pursuing this as a life's occupation, along with editing our manuals and typing them neatly. You will not recognize our future product. This is the last homegrown product. To the degree that his spelling checker is accurate, everything will now be spelled correctly and neatly printed. Of course, the price will triple. A very amazing guy. And a great asset to all of us, not just for his abilities, scholarliness, but the fact that he got a wholesale deal on computers. I give you Richard Schmidt.
The Perko Notebook.
I heard that.
Thank you.
I guess I'm going to do it this way.
All right, I ain't fussing.
There you go.
Okay, thank you. That's neat. That's the first time I have actually been introduced as a Perko member. And that's really, really a thrill. It really is. I don't know if any of you have ever hung out in the back rooms where salesmen go in their little tacky desks when they're not out trying to sell you something. But they're real fond of putting up inspirational messages and silly signs. And one that I've seen a lot is of a guy, he's usually wearing a loud check suit and a bright red tie, and he's got pencils stuck in his pocket. And the caption is, "Last week I couldn't spell salesman, and now I are one." Well, last October, I went to my very first Sartan Do, my very first seminar. And I sat way in the back of the room and I listened and I was real confused because I didn't know what these people were talking about. They were using words and terms that I understood the words, but I just didn't understand the way they were being used. And that was last October, and since then I've worked hard and learned, and at that time I didn't know what Perko was, and now I are one. And that's neat. I like it. But on the other hand, I find it a little intimidating. And when Dr. Sartin asked me to address groups like this, one of the first questions that sort of flashed through my mind was, what can I bring to this group that isn't already more than adequately represented by the gentleman on my left? I mean, I just cannot pick races the way Jim Bradshaw does. It's in the hat, guys. It's all in the hat. He looks at the races and it's thump, thump. One thump, he looks down, thump, thump, thump. When he gets to good horses, thump, thump. And that's how he picks races. And it doesn't take much longer. And he puts a finger here and a finger here and a finger there and a finger. Somebody down my bookie. And he's got the winner and the place horse right there. I can't do that. I don't have Dick Quigley's 40 years of experience to share with you because I haven't been doing it that long. And I don't have a suit like Bob's. I mean, he's looking good tonight. Oh, but he dressed up. He's looking all so sharp. So I didn't even bring a jacket. God, I feel tacky when I'm rooming with him. But I thought about it a little bit, and one of the things I can share with you is a way that you can become a winner without that, because I don't have any of those things. I don't have any great handicapping intuition. I am not even a particularly good classical handicapper. I haven't been doing it very long, and I never read all those books and things. I was always a computer handicapper. Give me a racing form and nothing else and I'm helpless. But I have learned to use the tools of the Sartin methodology to make up for it. I have learned that you can substitute meticulous record keeping and a lot of hard work for years of experience and intuition. And if you'll kind of let me, I'll be glad to share it with any of you, particularly those of you who feel a little bit in awe of some of these other guys, because they're good. But, well, of course I am. I'm up here, aren't I? But I'll tell you, you really don't need it. In my second to last 20 race cycle at Hollywood Park, I hit 85%. And I showed a 35,100% return on investment for the meeting. I did real well, and I did it without that intuition. And I did it through the old-fashioned way. I earned it. I ride up every night, and I stay, and I keep my records meticulously. And if you're willing to do that kind of work, the tools are here, and I'll be glad to share some of them with you. And I thank you very much. And I thank you for saving me a seat. The new guy has to sit way down on the end, I guess.
Thank you, sir.
Last is first.
For the benefit of those of you who are new with us and for the refreshment of those who are not, I'm going to take a few minutes before we break for coffee and other refreshments and our guest who's going to tell us about the Saratoga venture. I'll give you a little brief background and history of the methodology and into why it works, into why it circumnavigates some of the classical handicapping concepts and embraces many that you don't realize that it embraces just by osmosis. It all started in therapy. It all started with a group of persons who were under indictment by the law for having done something felonious as a result of a gambling problem. They were truck drivers who dumped their load, let their refrigeration go off, hawked their load, did any number of onus things from the standpoint of what was strictly legal in the interests of gambling and or alcohol-related incidents. I didn't fool around with the alcohol-related instances, because every time I talk about alcoholism, it makes me thirsty. Besides which, I knew something about alcoholism. And as any, we have a nurse here who'll tell you, no good health healing professional will ever discuss something he knows about. Does Dr. Lerner discuss podiatry? No. So I wanted to get into something that I knew nothing about, which was gambling. So I volunteered to take from this group called the Roadrunners, which is kind of an Alcoholics Gamblers Anonymous for truck drivers exclusively in that particular part of Southern California. I had to take them into therapy to, quote, cure, unquote, their gambling problems. So I read Freud and all the things on gambling and compulsion and obsession. And there's no really very little truth in the concept that there are compulsive gamblers and obsessive gamblers. These terms are something that psychiatry and medicine in general are not totally agreed on, the nature of a compulsion or an obsession. An obsession is an idea you have, and the compulsion is acting out of that idea. It's an all-encompassing idea. Mostly gambling is an impulse. If you were in Las Vegas and you pull the slot machines all the time you're there, that's not an obsession. That's an impulse. When you get to Barstow and you're still pulling all the levers on all the cigarette machines and everything, then you maybe have a problem. But just doing it because it's there.
Richard Burton's microphone never fell off in the middle of a speech. Couldn't need one.
The Freudian said that if you had a compulsion, a gambling type compulsion, or any other kind of a compulsion, that you should not try to cure it. And he was quite right. If you try to cure compulsion of this nature, the tendency is that it will crop out somewhere else. In other words, if you cure a man of his gambling compulsions, he's liable to not gamble anymore, but he turns into Jack the Ripper. It's like putting hot water in a tea kettle, putting the fire under it, and then not letting any escape valve go, that thing that whistles. Put a Loctite cap on your tea kettle and see what will happen. As the heat builds up underneath the water, it explodes. It has no outlet. Same thing with so-called compulsions and obsessions. If you cure one, like for instance with hypnotherapy, you can cure arthritis or hay fever, but you get something else in its stead. Heart disease or cancer or something else. So if you cure one obsession or one thing by behavior modification, all you do is create another manifestation. So behavior modification is not a very good cure or ameliorator of any disorder, because it merely is substituted for by another. And Freud knew that, so what he and his practitioners did was not to try to cure people of these problems, but to get them to temper. If they wanted to break the bank at Monte Carlo, he let them bet smaller amounts, and that was the way he would treated it. Nobody ever took the most simple course in treating the problem of losing. Winning. I read through all these people who had written on gambling, from Dostoevsky to Freud to Jung and Adler and all those in between, and all of them discussed it in literature and in psychology and psychiatry, and none of them ever came up with, hey, the cure for losing is winning.
This is the end of the tape.